welcome to the Mile 99 interview series with your hosts, Greg Larkin, Mike Turner, and Jessica Harris. Enjoy this episode, and we'll hope to see you on the trails soon.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to the Mile 99 interview. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Turner. Mile 99 is a place where you can just come out, get together, hang out with our people, like-minded folks in our community, share our stories and our successes, our training, our failures, even get into some of our deepest trail secrets. This is also a place we can get the latest in local race news, kind of find out what's going on in our community. In fact, in a bit, we have a new section that Greg Larkin's going to get into some of our race news, which is exciting. We record in front of a live Zoom audience with one take, no breaks. And unlike the trails, what's said here is on the record. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Greg Larkin and Jessica Harris. Greg, how's it going?
Pretty good. Yeah, we got out and saw a little bit of RDL over the weekend. That was exciting. So I'm still nursing some foot issues, but I've decided, I think the last time we talked, to do a little rowing challenge for November. 10 days in, still going, third of the way there day-wise, but not even close to the number of meters I need to do by the end of the year, end of the month. So we'll see how it goes.
So what is it? Do you have to do 1,000 meters a day? You add on 1,000 meters every day?
Yep, just did 10,000 today, 55,000 down, 410,000 to go.
Nice.
Feeling good, pretty tired. Nice. But luckily, I'm on a mailing list and we're all doing it together. I got a bunch of rowers from the UK egging me on, so that's good.
Nice. Jessica, how's it going with you?
Pretty good. Just came off, RDL weekend. I was kind of crewing and bringing my kids around to the aid stations. And man, it is nice to see everyone in person. It was really good and long, fun weekend. I woke up Monday and I was like, what just happened? It felt so good to be around everyone. Yeah. Now I'm just still recovering from that. And I didn't even run.
Wasn't it weird seeing everybody in one place? Kind of weird.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. But I mean, I shed a few tears. I saw people and we were at the cool aid stations for a long time, just because my kids know that place. We were there for Cool Moon 100. And so we were just kind of camping out there and just like sharing drinks with people and, trail people, hanging out with my kids. It just felt really, really great. We have a really good community here in Auburn, so we're really lucky. So we are live on Facebook. If you guys want to join the Zoom, you absolutely can. I will drop the link for you guys. We also have a Patreon. It is $1. If you guys can't commit to $1 a month, because, we understand that. We also have our Venmo, which we'll drop. It's at the Mile 99 interview. And if you guys just want to give a one-time donation for the Troy episode, go ahead and send that over with the message, "We love Troy." So we know it's for the Troy episode. So we just want to thank everyone who keeps contributing to us. It really helps us. We're super thankful for our community here.
Yeah, it's I think we have enough money now. We could probably start ordering some stuff for Christmas. I think that's kind of our hope. I think we have enough saved up, like $15 maybe. We can probably order like 5 shirts.
Heck yeah. I mean, we have our shirts, so, and I kind of put it on our Instagram. They're pretty cool. So.
Oh yeah. Greg, what's up with the news this week?
Well, I mean, Mike had this great idea this week. Why don't we start talking about some of the people that we know, love, and admire in our community? We saw a lot of them over the weekend. We've had a lot of them on the show. And so we just want to call out a few people that we've talked to in the past, especially because RDL was such a great event and so many people just kind of came together and it just really felt like the community was reuniting there. I'll kind of go down some of the results and talk about some of the people we've had on before. Danny Murphy, this guy is the founder and developer of the Ultra Pacer app that you may have heard of if you heard our episode with him. It helps you gauge your effort during your runs, your races, and he must have used it pretty well for himself during RDL because this was his first 100 miler. He finished 12th overall, 1954, amazing performance. This guy flies. I think you, maybe Jessica, you saw him out there. And you know, he just,
he was way too fast for me.
Yeah, maybe he didn't see him because he's just ahead of everybody. So he did great. Karen Fram is a great friend of ours. We interviewed her and her husband a while back. She had a couple of years ago a DFL at RDL. It doesn't matter. She finished. She was like 2 minutes to spare a couple of years ago. This year, 28:31. She was just so excited. She got her qualifier. She's had a rough go of it the last couple of years, and she's really kind of like turned things around at Headlands a couple of months ago, and that got her some good confidence, and she did great at RDL. Karen Bonet. All right, so Javelina, Mike, you were there. 27:49 finish for her. Comes back a week later, 29:36 finish at RDL. I mean, come on. So this is some of the amazing stuff we see in the community here. And then, I mean, forget about it. Cooney, this guy runs everything, right? We all know Cooney. He's done 10 RDLs. He posted on his Instagram, his Facebook. You got to check out his medal stash. His buckle stash. I mean, just the number and the array of different designs. It's really fantastic to see that. 28:38 finish for him. He came in right after Karen Framis. Just great. And then Mike, I mean, you were down at Javelina pacing. You were pacing at RDL. You know, just some of the people from our community. Cole Watson, first time 100 miler, fast guy, third place. Was he in the 13 hour range, I think, down there at Javelina or something like that? I mean, just fantastic stuff. Melissa Penwell, we had her on recently. She just ran a half marathon, run the parkway, hour 41 finish. So we're just seeing some great stuff. People are really getting back into things. You know, we may have had some time off for a while, but everybody's hitting it hard. So it's great to see. And we just want to see more of it coming out in 2022. Community events. You know, pretty regular attendees at Thursday at the aid station, 6 p.m. up in Auburn. Go check out Paulo and everybody there. And apparently there's a beer mile on Saturday at the aid station at 6 p.m. So come drink beer, run a mile, and we don't all want to know what happens after that. So it could be ugly, but hey, you got to give it a try. Yeah. And, you know, at this point in the year, things are tailing off, but we still have tons of training groups. If you join up to, Trail Running Adventures on Facebook, you're going to see all kinds of like weekly trail run, training runs and other types of things with David and Hassan's group. I know they've got a whole series of things to prepare for all the spring races coming up next year. So definitely check them out. And I think we're going to be talking to them fairly soon. So stay tuned for that. All right. Well, that's it for community news. And I hope you learned something there. And we have such a great community. It's great to talk about them.
Thanks, Greg. That was so awesome. Now tonight, we're super excited. We have Troy on tonight, Troy Meadows. He is first and foremost a husband, a soon-to-be father, an entrepreneur, a world traveler, a backpacker, a fast packer, FKT holder, and an ultra runner. Hey, Troy, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Jessica. Thanks for having me. And Greg, Mike, you as well. Nice to see you guys.
So what we like to do with our guests is we like to go all the way to the back, to the very beginning. We like to know where you started from. So lay it down for us. Where were you born?
Gosh, so my mom went into labor on I-95, right outside this town called Florence, South Carolina. I was supposed to be born in Germany. I was born about 2 months premature, and I have a twin brother. So the two of us were born, in Florence, South Carolina. So. Odd fun fact, they had the premier prenatal care center in the Southeast was like literally on the next exit where she went into labor. So
that's crazy. You know, when people tell me they have a twin and I didn't know, I have a feeling inside my body. So it takes me a second to there's another person that was born at the same time as you, shared space inside a female body with you. So that's pretty cool as well. That could have been in your intro, but I think twins, when you grow up, you're kind of like, okay, I get it, but it's still very cool to us non-twin people. So that's pretty cool. So after that early 2 months early, did you stay in the States for a little bit?
Well, I spent 2 months in an incubator. And then as soon as I was well enough to travel, I spent the first 17 years of my life growing up on military bases overseas. So both my parents are Department of Defense school teachers. So my mom taught English, my dad taught physical education. And we spent first 2 years of my life in Bonn, Germany before the wall came down. And then moved on to the Philippines until I was five, spent 9 years in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba on the naval base there. And then, kind of my middle school, late middle school into high school back in Germany in a Air Force base called Ramstein. So.
So how do you do schools when you're on U.S. military bases? Is it pretty streamlined or is it like a homeschool thing? Because I'm not familiar with that at all. So how did you keep your education consistent when you move?
Right. So, they have their own school systems on the base. So my parents are actually our teachers. They teach, my mom taught a bunch of different grades. My dad taught PE, but they have, a K-12 school system on every single military base overseas. And I guess it just depends on when you move. We're lucky enough to move in between school seasons, in between school years, excuse me. Whereas I know when you're active duty, they move around quite a bit and you could get redeployed, your family could get redeployed, on the drop of a dime. And there's a lot of catch up that has to happen for the most part. You just kind of, everyone's kind of working the same curriculum, so to speak. The school year goes at the same pace, but similar to how you would if you had to change schools in the U.S. But they're basically, imagine a bunch of U.S. schools. So
that's pretty cool. And so is there any sports programs or anything in the elementary school on base? What is that? Any of the physical PE stuff? What does that look like?
Yeah, so there's kind of everything you would think of at a normal school they have. So we, in middle school, I ran track, I ran cross country. My dad was a long distance track coach and cross country coach. I played soccer. I was a junior varsity soccer player, ran varsity cross country. When we were in Germany, that's kind of would be my formative years from like eighth grade to graduating high school. There's a lot of military bases in Europe and in Germany. And so we would go and compete against all of the other schools. So we would have cross country meets and track meets, and you have your local rival schools and then schools fall all the way up from the Netherlands and Belgium and lots of German schools all coming together to compete against each other. So
that's really fascinating. That was my next question. Like, you can probably train, but can you compete? And it sounds like you did.
Yeah.
That sounds really awesome. So you did soccer and cross country through middle school, and then that took you to high school too, or did you add something?
So I was like a swimmer early on, and then that was like when we lived in Cuba, I was on the swim team, and then when we moved back to Germany, I ran cross country and track kind of early, and then soccer was kind of later on. So like middle school into high school was cross country and track, and then I think my junior and senior year I played soccer.
And do you just have your twin, or is there any other siblings?
Nope, just me and my brother. We're fraternal. I did want to put that out there. So not identical, but fraternal twins. So
still way, way cool. Like, it's really cool. But at least I think so. Yeah.
I will say, Jessica, it was nice to always have, I've always had my brother. We grew up, we're the same age. So we had a lot of things in common, a lot of things that were different. But we, growing up, we always had each other. So.
And, that was I come from a big family, and that was the reason that I had more than one kid, is because I was like, you need a buddy. And then I was like, wait, what if you don't like that buddy? I'll have another one. Wait, what if that one doesn't like that one? So I'm just going to have one more. So yeah, I get it. Always having a buddy is pretty nice, especially in your guys' circumstance though. Besides mom and dad, you had someone who you could, developmentally was a peer. Play sports with you as well?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. He played soccer. Kinsey, my brother, he got much better grades than I did. And he's pretty athletic as well. But growing up, we played everything from t-ball to soccer, like all the youth leagues, YMCA stuff. And then going into high school, he played soccer. He didn't really get into track or cross country though.
Were your parents active at all? Did they have any hobbies?
My dad is a longtime runner and cyclist. I know he ran, he did one triathlon. He's really not into swimming as much. So he likes to bike. When I was growing up, he was, running 25, 30 miles a week and then biking like 100 plus miles, and he would run commute. And I remember being really young and he would go for his afternoon runs and I would jump on my bike and I would bike with him and he would run. To be honest, he's a big part of just kind of my athletic career. So.
Yeah, we see that a lot. Active parents, not necessarily pushing their kids, but being the example, doing what they love, and it really plays out later in life, which I think is the same thing with you. So after high school, you did all these things. Any college after that? Where were you? Kind of fill us in with some dates and where you were in the world.
Yeah, so I did a semester in college. Realized that was only so much fun. I ended up going back to Europe for the rest of that year and then coming back and going to a vocational school for film and video production. And I did that. That was like a 12 month program. It was a AA degree. So it's a 2-year program condensed into 12 months. It was pretty intensive. It's a 24-hour schooling system in 4-hour blocks. I did a lot of film stuff. We did a 16 millimeter project, a 35 millimeter film project. This is like back before everything was digital and you still shot on film. But I remember like one of my hardest days was a shoot day and a lab day. So we had like an 8-hour shoot and then a 4-hour break. And then I had 2 back-to-back labs. So we kind of, within a 24-hour period, I had about 4 hours of sleep, and that's kind of how the schedule was set up. And I mean, the idea behind that, the school is called Full Sail. It's in Orlando, Florida. The idea behind that is just like when you're working in that business, it's long hours. So they're just kind of prepping you for that concept of life and work. So
were you, that sounds like a pretty big commitment. Were you staying up with any running or swimming or soccer? Were you doing any of that while you were doing that program?
No, I kind of fell out of running. I used to do a lot of inline skating, a lot of aggressive inline skating. So I used to, go to skate parks and do a lot of really crazy stuff with rollerblades. So I kind of kept up with that a little bit. But school really, that school really took it out of me as far as doing sports. And I honestly fell out of love with running for a better part of a decade. I didn't get back into running until my 30s. So.
But I think you were a little active in your 20s. Do you want to tell us some of the stuff that you did in your 20s?
I was a vagabond. I was pretty much self-imposed. I was homeless, self-imposed. So I would work like odd jobs for 6 months out of the year, save money, and then go on the road and travel to music festivals, sleep in national forests. I've definitely done everything from ate at food kitchens to spanged for gas money, because that's just what, not spanging, I guess that's like asking people out of the kindness of their heart to give you money so you could put gas in your gas tank. And I spent about 7 years crisscrossing the country that way, spending my summers on the road I've been to 47 states that way, traveling, mostly through the summers. And then I would end up back in Florida for the winter, doing everything from, delivering pizzas to working construction jobs.
I haven't heard that word spange since I was in Humboldt going to college. it's short for spare change, change.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that since, I haven't heard that term in 20 years or so. It's funny.
I've never heard it. And so when you say country, you said 47 states, when you were living that lifestyle by choice, it was in the United States, right?
Yeah, it definitely was. Yeah.
Okay. And what was your family doing and thinking at that time?
My parents were still in Europe at the time. So I would communicate with them. And I mean, to be honest, I just kind of kept I would say I compartmentalized that part of my life with them. And it was a lot easier to do that because when they're both still working and still living overseas, you know, my communication habit with my dad is much better now than it was, let's say, in my mid-20s, because I was spending most of my time, I don't know, just kind of living the life I wanted to live and really experiencing the country in a really meaningful way for myself. But I did get a chance to see a lot of like the backcountry, a lot of the desert Southwest. I'm a big fan of New Mexico, Arizona. I love those states. And then I got a chance to visit California. Definitely been to Humboldt, Mike, and you know, enjoyed kind of everything from Northern California, the Redwoods. And then, you know, a lot of states I've traveled to have kind of just been seen through through a car window, honestly, you know. So,
well, just looking at you, for anyone who's not who's listening to the podcast, he is in a home. He does have things around him, and he is an entrepreneur. So living that lifestyle by choice, exploring, you know, soaking up everything that this country has to offer, what made you switch from that to here? How did we get here?
I mean, I think it just, at some point, I don't want to say you kind of have to grow up, but you have to decide what you're going to do with your life, you know? And I spent most of my mid-20s kind of traveling around with that question. You know, I got out of film school and my options were kind of either move to California, like Southern California, or move to New York, or, you know, and kind of give myself to like that film, those two like hubs of film and story creation. And I really just wasn't into it. I was kind of burnt out from school. And, you know, so I spent a good time asking that question and wondering. And, you know, what really happened is I found my future partner, my wife. We kind of settled down and, you know, from there we moved from Florida to North Carolina and then ultimately, you know, made the transition out to California. So.
So now we kind of have like the picture of where you were in, you know, work-life balance and how you're getting through that. Where did you start getting active again?
Yeah. So my 30th birthday was probably like my 30 was probably the worst year of my life. And, you know, within a 2-week period, I mean, it's like my mom passed away, my dog died in my arms, and I turned 30, all within like 10 days. And at that point, you know, I was smoking cigarettes. I was doing a lot of things that weren't necessarily unhealthy. I've always been into eating like organic food. And even then I was like smoking organic tobacco. I don't think that really makes it any healthier, but it's better for the environment, I guess. And I went like cold turkey. I quit smoking cigarettes and I started running. And that was kind of a really pivotal point for my life, you know. I started running. I kind of got right into like running, you know, 5K every other day. And that's kind of what brought me back to activity. I like found out about like Spartan races and I was like, oh, I'm going to run an obstacle race. And so I started doing more calisthenics and body weight training and ended up hurting my knee and kind of had a back and forth relationship with that injury for about a year. And then, and that's kind of when I found ultra running. I found a couple books. I read Born to Run and I read Eat and Run by Scott Jurek. And that, I mean, I kind of, at that point I was like, okay, this sounds very interesting. And, you know, back in my 20s, I would love to go backpacking. I would love to like get out and spend, you know, a week at a time in nature. And as I evolved and grew up, I realized that like that time didn't really exist for me anymore. And so ultra running was a really interesting way for me to kind of, bridge a couple of my other things I really loved. And then, you know, just finding a new love for running and realizing I wasn't really fast. I was never a fast runner, but I definitely like to go long. And so it kind of just slowly over my 30s, I basically use that time to build my engine and try to get resilient and stay injury free. So,
you know what, the funny thing about running, you mentioned running, a lot of us go through struggles in our lives and running is something that a lot of us, you often run from something at the same time you're running towards something new. So you think you're running away, but you're running to, you end up somewhere so much better. So it's a very interesting thing just to be out in nature and to run in the clarity of your mind and the time in your own head. It's just really invaluable, in my opinion.
That's kind of the gift that running brings me. I could never run another ultra in my life. I would gladly give up running another ultra to be able to run five miles a day. Like just that hour of feeling, you know, feeling, hearing your breath, feeling the footfalls, and like really getting into an open space, a blank space in your mind. It's very few things that can get you to that place. So
yeah, I'm with you. And I'm with you. It's just that's why we love it. That's why we get out there. And I come from a similar background of just backpacking. I grew up backpacking and I just loved it. And the running was more of a, running made backpacking easier because I stayed in shape. But then I just realized I can see 20 miles in 4 or 5 hours. And it was pretty nice. So it just kind of evolved out of backpacking. So I kind of see the point there. You have a lot of good races. I mean, I was looking through your race history and, you know, I mean, you did, starting 16, you did your first ultra, way to cool. A lot of local races to our area, the ones that folks here know, Lake Sonoma. Of course, Miwok is one that I did, and that was a great one. In fact, with the guy that plays the bagpipes up on the Foggy Hill in the morning, that's always pretty awesome. Yeah. I've not heard of Sugar Hood. What is that one about? Where is that one at?
So that used to be a Seneca. Am I saying that right? Seneca race. Racing city, a lot of NorCal races. That race hasn't happened in a couple of years. I would like to bring it back, and I'm trying to figure out what it's going to look like to pull the permits. But there's this place. There's a Sugar Loaf is a state park. It's a privately owned park here in Sonoma County, and it's where all of us that run in Sonoma County go to get vert. It's where the biggest climbs are. There's a handful of really good, big technical climbs there. And it's inland, so you can really get the heat if you need to do heat training as well, especially in the summer. But that, it's a 50K. It's got about 9,000 feet of climbing. And it's a pretty brutal route. I mean, I think the course would slightly change from when I ran it. But it's an amazing local 50K. A lot of Sonoma County runners show up to that one. And it's brutal in all the best ways. So
nice. We'll stay tuned and see if that comes alive again. That'd be exciting. And you've also done canyons. I see you did a couple of years. You did the most recent one. So with the new course change, you did the old course and the new course.
Yeah, the year I ran it in, I think 2019. That was the snow year. So it was an alternate, it was in triple out and back alternate course. Ah. And then, this year was legit. I like the route this year, to be honest with you. I like the point to point, and I like that more than half of the vert is smashed in the back half of that race. So.
Yeah. I saw that Epic Endurance did post a 50K course on the web online recently. So we'll see how it comes out this year, but it's going to be a good one. So one of the things I want to get into is your FKT. And so, like I said, I went to Humboldt State. And so up there in Humboldt County, it's a legend. The Lost Coast is like this mysterious legend of this. The highway goes inland around Humboldt. So there's this 100-mile section of the coastline where you can't get in with a car, you can't get in with, you know, an RV. It's only accessible by foot, and it's called the Lost Coast. It's such I can just feel the mist as I say the words, the cold air. So you did this. I want to get into that. You did one attempt early on, but let's dig into that. Tell us about the Lost Coast and your FKT attempt.
Yeah. So the Lost Coast, like you said, you know, it's right there on it's a Mendocino coastline, Mendocino County coastline in California. It's untouched. So it's a part of two different state parks. You have the northern section, which is completely ran on the beach. It's completely on the coast. There's about 7 miles of trail. And then you have the southern section. In total, it's 57 miles. It's about 9,000 feet of total gain. And then you have the southern section, which runs through the Sinkyone Wilderness. And it's about as rugged a trail you'll ever find. And it's, I cannot, it's hard for me to describe how rugged that big parts of that route is. But getting into the Lost Coast, it's a really epic adventure, man. It's really tough in so many ways. In the first year that I decided I wanted to get into it, COVID had hit. I was recovering from a hernia surgery, and I had myself in decent shape. I thought I was in good shape, and I was looking around going like, well, what can I do? And I found I've always wanted to do the Lost Coast for my backpacking days. I'd heard of the route. Most people do it in like 4 or 5 days. A lot of fast packers will do it in like 2 days. And I started looking around at fastest known times, and I saw the route, and I was looking at it, and I was looking at the times that were set. And at the time, Ricky Gates and Lior, I can't ever pronounce his last name. They had set it. And I was looking at the time, and I was like, man, 13 hours and 47 minutes. It's like, I've ran like Sonoma in 10 hours. That's got 10,000 feet of climbing. I ran Pioneer, which is right up in you guys' neck of the woods. And that's got 10,000 feet of climbing. I did that in 10 hours. It's like, man, I'm in pretty good shape. I bet I could beat that. And so I started doing my research, and you realize that the beach section, it's 27 miles of beach. There's 3 sections where it's impassable during high tides. So you really have to do your research there, and you really have to make sure that you have a good tide window. You can find charts, and I found that the first year that I ran it, I had a tide of, I think it was -0.8. And that was really good for getting across the beach section. And it's pretty rugged. It's really amazing. It's a lot. It's not really sand. It's a lot of loose rock. It's a lot of rock hopping. There's about 6 miles of that 27 miles where you get up on flat trail. And then the rest of it, it's basically 20 miles of running on the beach. And it's like you said, it's foggy, it's misty, it's super, super rugged. So, I mean, the first time I went in and I really thought I was going to go in there and just like do some really amazing things. And I'll be honest with you, the route just chewed me up and spit me out. I felt really good getting off the beach. You have about a 5 mile road climb up Shelter Cove Road. You get to the second section. And as soon as I hit the road, I realized like I can't run anymore. And I like had to hike up the entire road. And then I kind of got my legs back underneath me in the Siskiyou Wilderness section. And I felt like I was on par. I was on track to kind of come close, you know, I felt like I still had it. And then about 10, you know, about mile 42, the wheels just fell off and it turned into like a really epic death march to the finish.
Was that first part supported or unsupported?
I've done both times I did it. I did it unsupported. The supported times are fierce and set by some pretty stout dudes. At the time, it was a little over 10 hours. And then just recently, the year that I set the unsupported FKT, Tyler Green went under 10 hours on the route, which is, I can tell you, that's insane. So yeah, unsupported both times.
And so did you come across any backpackers? What time of year was it when you went out there?
I did it in August, toward the end of August, third week in August. Yeah, lots of backpackers. Lots of really interesting looks from people, because when, you know, most of them have these huge packs on, and then, you know, it's like me with a handheld and a vest on, just kind of cruising by. So
that's awesome. Yeah. 50 miles from nowhere and you got like one bottle and they're like, what's this guy? You know?
Yeah.
That's cool. So you tried that and it chewed you up, spit you out. You were talking running at night, right? The death march with a headlamp up some of the steepest climbs that you've ever could imagine. So it's funny how when you think of something like, oh, I can do that. My times are good. I could probably kill that. And you're like, oh man, then the trail just says, no, you can't.
100. And I mean, the one thing I can say about the wilderness section, the southern section, like these trails, I mean, they were, they're, they're glorified game trails. Like I cannot continue to express the fact that these things are like about as primitive of trails that you can ever climb on. And they're super punchy. And when you look at the back half, you do this big 3,000 foot climb, road climb. And then they have these like little dragon's teeth and then these little 900 foot elevation change, 1200 foot elevation change climbs, but they're so steep. And it's just like, a lot of it's bushwhacking. Like you're pushing, you're having to push yourself through bushes that are growing through the trail. Like it's amazing.
But it's a pretty defined course. It's not like you're going from a point to a point. There's actually somewhat of a trail you have to follow.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, there's definitely a trail you can follow. I mean, at one point when I first did it, I walked off the trail. It was at night. And the trail kind of made a hard left and I wasn't paying attention. I kind of pushed through these two bushes and took four steps and stopped and looked around and was like, oh yeah, this is not right. And it took me about 10 minutes to collect myself and look at, you know, I found a point. I was like, okay, this is my tree. And I just started like going in a couple different directions to try to figure out like where the trail is. And it took me a little bit, but then I looked kind of up and over my shoulder and up and to the right and was like, oh, okay, that's the trail. And when I got up there, I realized like, don't be stupid, Troy, you know, like keep your head together. Like you're near the end here, but you know, one wrong step in the middle of the night. And you know, the last thing I wanted to do was spend the night at the Lost Coast. So.
Yeah. Or be lost in the coast, lost in the Lost Coast. And that's a bad joke. It's anyway, one thing, when I was backpacking, I had a friend that was a good backpacker tell me, when you get off the trail and you don't know where you are, it's always above you.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, the trail is above you. Your body, human nature wants to go down and the trail is always above you if you're lost.
Well, that was good advice. That's exactly where the trail was when I finally found it too. So
then that was 2020, early pandemic. And then you went back out there. You tried it again?
Yeah, I went back almost 11 months to the day. So like the week after my birthday, I'm born in July 19th. I went out and went after it, you know, one more time. And it's kind of classic ultra runner stuff, man. Like I suffered for 10 miles. And when I got to the end, you know, my wife was there. She kind of had this look on her face like, dude, where were you? You know, because like she'd been waiting for me for hours. And man, it was 30 minutes I was in the car and I was like, I'm going back next year. Like I was already telling myself, like, now that I know what I'm up against, okay, I know what I need to do, I'm gonna go back. And I basically devoted the next 11 months to everything was all about Lost Coast. Like even my run at Canyons, that was the B goal. That was literally just the Western States qualifier. And I need a long effort, you know, a couple months before I go after the Lost Coast again. So it was really, everything was geared toward getting back out there at the end of the summer and going after it again. So.
Yeah, that's one that I will do. It's on my list and I guess I've forgotten about it. You know, it's been so long since I thought about it, but yeah, definitely. I think I probably would do, maybe I would do a couple of days, you know, try to do a kind of fast pack, maybe spend a night or two. I think that would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to do it a couple of days and you don't have you need a permit for the beach section and they go quick. So you could show up and run the 27-mile beach section and then either have a place to stay in Shelter Cove or you could get into Needle Rock, and all those campgrounds are first come, first serve. So you can kind of, once you get into the Siskiyou, you can start camping, but you know, just to be, you know, for your planning and logistics.
Yeah, I'll reach out to you. We'll chat, you know, so that sounds fun. There's on the FKT site, which I was browsing, you have another one you mentioned here, the Pull Mountain Double Up and Down. So that was another FKT you have on there. What's that one about?
So that's out here in Sonoma County. That's the, we have Pull Mountain. It's part of the Jenner Headland Preserve. And it's just a big, steady, long climb. It was actually a big part of some of my training too, but for Lost Coast. But a lot of people will go out and run it just up and down. It's about 15 miles. One summit's about 15 miles. And then one of my buddies had this brainiac idea. He's like, let's do the double one day. You know, we did it on Christmas Day, and we kind of treated it like a race. And I ran out of my mind, to be honest with you. I had a really good run there, and set the, there was no FKT for the double, so I set the FKT. And then since then, a buddy of mine, Grant, a really fast local guy here, he's gone. He went out there and put work on my time. And I'll be honest, nice. With you, I had one of those amazing. I had an amazing day out there for myself, and to watch someone go and drop 47 minutes on your amazing, almost an hour on your amazing days is always humbling. So
that's what friends are for.
Yep.
Right.
100%.
So earlier in the episode, you mentioned, you know, you, when you started to change your life in your 30s, you read Born to Run, and kind of like you read Scott Jurek's book. I know that Greg has read that one as well. And you want to quickly chat about plant-based nutrition. I know Greg's a big fan of, you know, running on vegetables and, you know, plant-based diet, you know, maybe. So tell us some more how you kind of transitioned into that.
So I was vegan for like 9 years in my 20s. So I've kind of gone back and forth with like introducing meat into my diet. So when we first moved out to California, so many good clean sources for meat out here. So I would eat a little bit. We were living in the Sierra foothills at the time. But I've never been like ever since I was in my early 20s, I've never been a three day a week meat eating kind of guy. And even now I think fish comes into the diet maybe once a week or so at this point, once every other week, a couple times a month. But yeah, I'm a big proponent for eating lots of colors, lots of greens. We do a lot of meal prep at the house. So every Sunday, the wife and I will do meal prep for the week for our lunch. And then we have a staple of different things that we'll create for dinner. And then I have like my breakfast is every day I eat sourdough that she bakes, half an avocado, two tablespoons of hemp seeds, and some olive oil with some berries. So,
and having that diet change and kind of having a overarching view that you want to consume things that are good for you and good for the planet, how does that make your body feel versus when maybe you weren't valuing those things as much?
I mean, I think that's ultimately what led me down the path of vegetarianism or plant. I like to say plant-based because like the vast majority of my diet is plants, right? It really came down to like, man, I feel really good. I feel light. I guess that was the best way for me to describe it. Like I feel really light. And I feel like, you know, when I first got into vegetarianism, it was about impact. It was about the machine that creates our meat that I was kind of pulling away from and realizing like, hey, there's a lot of harm that goes to animals and just a lot of like unconscious thought that goes into the machine that produces the vast majority of the meat that we eat on the planet. And I wanted to kind of pull away from that. And I had a couple of really good mentors early on that showed me a couple of things that I think are really important if you're going to have a plant-based diet. So, you know, lots of spirulina, lots of hemp seeds, lots of seeds in general. And then just really being flexible and very experimental. But I mean, for me, I can see myself not eating a bunch of that. I mean, vegetables are good, you know, vegetables are really good.
And my doctor's been preaching the plant-based diet for some years now. And I'm slowly moving more plant direction. Probably eat fish once a week and maybe chicken once a week. And that's probably about it. But I think mine comes out of being maybe cheap, you know, because meat's expensive.
Yeah, meat's expensive. And you can eat a lot of organic vegetables for the price of a steak, you know.
Oh, yeah. But no, definitely, I know what you mean. I'm currently exploring how do I, you know, like just ideas and, you know, how do you eat better and get ideas? Because you read online, it can be overwhelming. Maybe like you mentioned what you eat with a fresh sourdough with avocados. I'm like, man, I'm coming over to Troy's house. That sounds pretty darn good. So maybe a couple of diets. So what are a couple of things like that we could kind of jump into and that would be good for our running?
I mean, So I like to eat spirulina. I like to do spirulina with a protein, with a plant-based protein shake every day, right? That's where you're going to get a lot of nutrient. It's a blue-green algae, so you get a lot of, there's a lot of vitamin K, which is usually predominantly found in meat, but it's a really great plant-based source for it. I love hemp seeds. I think pound for pound, it's got more omegas and more protein than steak. And then, you know, I'm also a big fan of, I make a lot of my own nutrition when I race and when I go out on hard efforts and training. So I've got a really killer gel recipe that is, you can find a link to it on my Instagram, but I make my own gel. It's basically like dates, honey water, peanut butter, and a couple other things. It kind of tastes like sweet Penang curry. I really, really like that. It's that and Summit tea is what I basically, that's what I took in for, that was 95% of my calories for my loss when I set the Lost Coast FKT. When I went back and actually had a really, really good run. And then I have a chia fresca recipe that I use for just about all of my long runs. So it's chia, a couple tablespoons of chia in a 20-ounce bottle with a couple tablespoons of maple syrup, a freshly squeezed lime and some sea salt. And you just shake it all up and put it in the fridge overnight. And it's like slow drip, amazing fuel source. As long as you're not trying to go hard, you know, if you're going long and slow, it'll keep you fueled. And it's pretty simple. And to be honest, like that bottle is like I can take that on a 20-mile long run and I'm good. And it costs me less than a dollar to make. So just a little foresight. It takes 2 minutes and overnight in the fridge and you're good to go. So I think I would love to see, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think like prepackaged nutrition, there's a place for it, especially running. There's a convenience factor. I still eat a lot of Clif Bars because they're just convenient, you know, but every time I make my own fuel, like it's that much single use waste that's not going into the environment as well. So I definitely am trying to be conscious about that. And, you know, you kind of have to balance the convenience. The convenience is real. It's like sometimes you just need it. So
I was going to say it'd be great to get some recipes, but it sounds like we can find some links. Maybe put some of those in the show notes. I've actually made chia fresca myself and just recently discovered I have a lime bush or a tree or something in the front yard. So I need to find something to do with a bunch of limes. So I think I'm going to have to start making more of that.
Yeah, the chia lime fresca is so good too. And I've like shared these with a lot of my friends and a lot of my ultra running friends. And like most of them, if you can handle the soluble fiber that's in chia, everyone that I've shared it with is like, oh, that stuff's amazing. So
there's a lot to learn and the internet can be overwhelming. So it's good to start with a couple of simple things. Try maybe once a week, I'm trying to introduce something new once a week and just start simple. In fact, I'm going shopping with a vegan friend of mine this Saturday. She's going to show me how to shop, but we're going to do it at Safeway. So I'm going to do a vegan shopping at where I'm going to try to get some ideas, you know, little bits at a time.
Yeah. I will tell you the stir fry and fried rice are like staples at my house. And you do the stir fry the first night, you make extra rice and you put the rice in the fridge and reheating rice is like terrible. But if you make fried rice with it, it tastes amazing. So, you know, that's kind of a couple of things. And then my wife she's an amazing cook. We definitely take turns with making the meals, but I have like four or five things that are my go-tos. She can make amazing vegetarian food out of like thin air. You know, she just kind of goes in the cupboard and says, oh, this is what we're having tonight. I'm like, this is amazing. I could have never thought of doing this, you know? So
nice. Yeah. Nice. That's a good, it's a handy person to have, especially if you're in a van or in a car or in a house or a tent, just kind of make something up. So I want to get into overcoming injury, you know, where we have, you know, we're getting near the end of the show, but I know you've had a number of setbacks and, you know, you just really have, you work through those and coming back, it seems to be, you know, really do well with coming back. So maybe kind of go through some of those things you've had and how you've worked through maintaining your balance, especially during COVID. I mean, it's all happened kind of at the same time, huh?
Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest with the listeners, I've had three hernia surgeries in 5 years. Yeah. So And one was like 1 year and then the next year and then 2 year break. And then I just recently had my third hernia surgery. So, you know, I've had issues on my right side, which have been repaired now. And then I just had to have my left side repaired. And it's really tough because like it's an open, it's an open surgery. It's like 8 weeks without, it's running's off the table for at least 8 weeks, sometimes 12 weeks. And it really comes down to like just having a really positive mental outlook and knowing that, hey, you're going to come back. My surgeon, he's an amazing guy. And like, he's not the kind of person that tells you like, oh, you can't do this anymore. He's like, hey, we're going to get you fixed up and you're going to get back to doing what you want. So it's nice when you start with someone that's not going to tell you what you can't do and they're going to tell you what you can do. But yeah, really like focusing on the PT. I meditate every single day. So like really doubling down on that practice and using it to kind of ground myself and realize like, hey, you know, today is today and tomorrow will come. And then the next day will come and eight or nine weeks will go by very, very quickly. I'm just getting back to running again. And, you know, I was blessed to have like a 2 year hiatus, between surgeries, which allowed me to kind of, I think get into some really, really good shape. But, you know, the for me, it's always knowing like, I want to do this. And so I'm going to do everything I can. So like, I do my PT, I do exactly what I'm told by my PT. Like I do the work. And I'm also really patient with myself. So like, you kind of can't, you know, with a lot of these things, you can't really train through the pain. You know, you have to wait until your body is nice and healed before you can add stress back to it. But, you know, like doing as much as you possibly can, and then really, you know, making sure that you have really good people in your village or in your corner. You know, I think every ultra runner needs a good PT in their life. Even if all you do is see them like once or twice a week, or once or twice a month or a year, to just kind of check in and say, hey, this is where I'm at. Or if you have a niggle, get in there and say, hey, this is where my issue is. And a lot of times they'll just point you in a direction that allows you to rehab without having to stop training, you know? And I think, you know, if you run ultras, you're probably a pretty type A driven person, and it's pretty easy to push past stuff. And I think that's kind of what's gotten me into a little bit of problems with some of the repairs that I've had to have done. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's really important to just kind of like step back and say, if I do the work, the reward will come, you know? And that's kind of the mentality I have when injuries happen, especially ones, I mean, you have mild stuff, you know, calf strain or something like that. But when you have something that takes you out of running for like 8 weeks, 3 months, you know, you really have to kind of reevaluate your relationship with running and realize like, man, this is, to be able to do this and to have a body that allows you to do this, it's definitely a gift. So
yeah, I like the idea of the meditation, because all of us runners get injured. We all are frustrated. We have to just realize we have a lot of other things that are valuable in our lives. And so we look at running and like, oh, if I can't run, I'm going to go crazy. But like, if you meditate through it and relax and realize that we need to be happy for the times we have, and don't compare ourselves to others, because there's always somebody that's more ridiculous than you. So we're trying to just pull it back and say, you know, I'm good. I'm good enough. And I enjoy what I enjoy. Just appreciate the life that you have and what we are able to do. And I like that, the kind of idea, you know.
It's a lot easier said than done, but you know, it's also like training and like practice, you know, like you can, a positive mental attitude is definitely highly trainable, and it takes practice to do it. And you'd be surprised how, you know, I've been doing the same meditation for going on 7 years now, and it's definitely changed my life. And it's more this subtle thing, like you don't realize it. And I've had some people tell me like, oh, I'm not good at meditating. And my answer to them is like, yeah, and Michael Jordan, you know, he did not have a great jump shot when he first picked up a basketball too, you know, but what did he do? He like practiced really, really hard to become the best athlete, you know, best basketball player, right? And like, you're not ever going to be good at meditating if you just sit down and after 2 seconds, you're like, oh, I'm not good at this. I'm never going to do this again. Like, of course you're not good at it. You haven't practiced. And that's why they call it a practice. So
I think that's really valuable information, especially as we're getting this really weird couple years of ultra running, and now people are getting back into racing. We might see some injuries coming from people or burning out, or we're all very excited. So maybe we're racing a lot, but to maybe end this year, punctuate this season, if we even have an ultra running season anymore, I feel like it's year round now, that we can, you know, take these breaks and really focus and make sure we're in this for the long haul. I think that's really good information. We're getting to the end of an hour. That just like totally flew by. I know I looked at the time and I said, oh my gosh, we're about done. And to wrap up, we always have our rapid fire questions. They're just four questions for our guests to know you just a little bit better. Are you ready?
Sure. Let's do it.
Okay, cool. Road or trail?
Trail.
Favorite post-race meal?
Pizza.
Like any toppings? We need details.
Vegetables, lots of vegetables. I mean, I'm a big fan of olives, peppers, sun-dried tomatoes.
I really like red onions on my pizza.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Bucket list race?
Hard Rock, Western States, both of those. But yeah, Hard Rock, next phase of my life is trying to actually run a 100-miler and then qualify for Hard Rock until I get in. So
awesome. This is our most controversial question. You know, we understand it happens, but we had to come here. Cats or dogs?
Dogs. Yeah.
Dogs. All right.
I've had both. I've had both. I mean, I've had everything from cats, dogs, rats, chickens. But dogs, definitely dogs. German Shepherd dogs, to be very specific. So.
So you like dogs that are as smart as cats?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a cat. I once had a cat that played fetch.
My cat, who's right here, his name's Spencer. My dog that just died taught him how to play fetch. So I play fetch with Spencer all the time.
That's awesome.
He plays with those little pipe cleaners that kids use that are like bendy. Yep. Those are his little toys. And I find a lot in my bed at 2 a.m. So that's what I don't like about cats. But because my dog doesn't really wake me up, my cat's like ready to go. So, thank you so much for coming on, Troy. We've had so much fun that just flew by. You bring such a nice energy to the podcast today, super relaxing. We are going to take a couple weeks off. This was the perfect episode to let us say. We are going to take a couple weeks off to spend time working on ourselves and being with our families. We will be back December, the first week of December, for Western State stuff. So stay tuned. And our Patreon again, $1 a month, or you can Venmo us with an I Love Troy in the subject line. So we thank you guys so much for joining us, and we'll see you in a few weeks, and we will see you on the trails. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.